Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What's up, everybody? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my pick and pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Celebrating a big Raptors win last night.
Was it that big?
I mean, technically, it was the biggest game in Raptors history, if you want to look at it from...
Man, every game is the biggest game in Raptors history. I'm so tired of this. Some nonsense, man.
It was nice not having to worry, though, throughout the entire game. That was great.
This is fair. You can actually relax and enjoy.
Oh, yeah. I told Raj before the game started, I told them that it was going to be a 40-point blowout, but they only won by like 36, so I guess I was close.
Little losers.
Yeah.
They suck. They don't even deserve to contend for the title. Banger in the paint, Rajon Walia. How you doing?
Man, there's so much NBA to talk about. This is just like my dream.
That's what you go to sleep at night hoping for, right?
Well, you have like 4 or 5 hours of basketball that you watch, and then what else is on your mind?
This is true. It's actually the hardest way to go to sleep after like a crazy game. Imagine going to sleep after that like 4 overtime game between Denver and Portland. How can anyone sleep after that? You'd be so amped up.
Yeah, and it's like, what, 2 o'clock Eastern time when the game ended? I was lucky I was on the West Coast.
Dude, was it bad on the West Coast? Like, did you feel tired at the end of that game? Because I was exhausted.
Mentally tired, but at the end of the day, it was only 11 o'clock when the game ended, and I was just thinking about those poor old folks in the East Coast that just watched like 1.5 hours of like intense fourth quarter and overtime games.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I fell asleep for a lot of that game. Woke up in the third overtime, and I was like, "What? What just happened here?" A little extreme. All right,
got more tired than Jokic did.
Oh, 65 minutes, this poor guy. Anyways, let's get back on track. Let's start. Josh, I guess you can do the honors of starting us with the Toronto Philadelphia series. Toronto just blew them out of the water, taking a 3-2 lead. Kawhi Leonard finally doesn't have to carry the load, and the Raptors' whole team actually pitched. They finally pitched in. There you go. They pitched in for a win. There's actually contributions now. Who'd have thunk it? That would help.
No, they were due. Like I was telling you guys, I mean, their three-point percentage, especially on open shots, was at like 32%, I think, throughout the series, which is insanely low, seeing as they were the highest percentage of three-point shooting team since they got Gasol. And then it all came to fruition yesterday, like everyone's shooting well. Gasol was hitting open shots, Danny Green in the first half, Kyle Lowry throughout the game played really well. And the bench wasn't abysmal. I mean, Philadelphia's bench was awful. I think they had 0 points going into the third quarter. Actually, no, they had, 4 points, I think, with Mike Scott and Greg Monroe getting a few buckets in the first quarter, but they had none in the second quarter. Overall, it was a great team win, obviously. And Kawhi not having to do everything was a nice touch because he's been having to shoulder way too much of the load, so he got a load management game last game.
That's a nice way to put it.
And, you know, Siakam was incredible yesterday, even though he missed a bunch of shots. Like, you could just see his activity out there, especially defensively. Like, the way he guarded Jimmy Butler in the third quarter was, I think, a huge reason why they were able to extend the lead.
What happened to that calf contusion? Sort of just disappeared.
Yeah, apparently it's a calf and hamstring. Like, he was saying that on the post-game conference. But I agree with Josh, and I think that was the most complete Raptors playoff performance this year. They played so well on both sides of the ball. And at the end of the day, it wasn't just about making those shots. It was actually about taking them as well, like taking the open looks, because Philly was just really trying to stop Kawhi. You could tell that their game plan was to double Kawhi and get the ball out of his hands. And at that point, you really got to make your shots. And They did, but I think on the other side of the kind of picture is more important in terms of how this series will go in the next game, and if there is a game seven, it's obviously has to do with the health of Joel Embiid, and I feel like he's getting a lot of unfair criticism. Obviously, he just doesn't look like he's the same player, and he is sick. I know it's not a physical injury, but if he's not ready to go in game six with at least like 75% of what he was able to give in game three, I don't think Philly has much of a chance. And I think that is really the factor on how competitive game six will be. It's the health of Joel Embiid. Obviously, if the Raptors play as well as they did, they're going to be hard to beat. But Embiid was just like a zombie on The Walking Dead out there.
Well, he is a superstar, though, right? Like, if you are the face of the franchise, you're obviously going to get all the criticism, even if you're sick or if you're injured. Like, there's no way around it. If he's gonna he's gonna play sick and then give like that kind of performance, you're kind of boned.
Yeah, but like look at another team that has a very strong starting lineup in Golden State. Like if let's say Steph doesn't like play well, there's still KD and Klay and at the time Boogie, and like there's a lot of other options that you expect just to pick up the load a little, like every once in a while. And obviously Embiid's had a few bad games, like he's only had the one really standout game, but like you have players like Butler, Tobias Harris, and Ben Simmons, and JJ Redick can get hot. And like even if they were able to pick up the load a little, like it wouldn't have been a blowout. They stunk it up too. Like there's no excuse, but Embiid's probably like the main reason why Philly was just not competitive. And like what, like we don't know what's going on, and I don't think he knows what's going on.
Oh, I know what's going on.
The Philly staff know what's going on.
I know what's going on.
Oh, shut up, Josh.
Are you ready for this?
Well, let's hear it. Oh, I'm
Joel
ready.
Joel has Gasol verticulitis.
Now, folks,
that's
we
what he
rarely
has.
Have a medical segment on this show, but in Joel Embiid's case, we'll make an exception. You see, there are any number of maladies which contain the suffix itis. During these playoffs, he's had left knee tendonitis. He's had gastroenteritis. And heading into Game 5 Tuesday night, well, it could have been sinusitis or rhinitis or nasopharyngitis, all of which fall under the category of upper respiratory infection. And now the Sixers as a team are battling Toronto Raptoritis.
Well, Kawhi
Symptoms
Leonarditis.
Include a rash of fast break points, a sudden urge to turn the ball over, and a mysterious desire to read a stat sheet when you're being blown out. We go to the highlights from Toronto.
Gasol just owns him. It is what it is. Gasol knows how to defend him and defend him without fouling too. And he can't move him. Most guys, like especially in the first playoff series, he was going against Ed Davis and Jared Dudley and Jared Allen, and he would just body them and get to the basket easily. But against Gasol, he can't do that, and that's why he's shooting so many threes and staying on the outside. But the other point...
No.
What?
Relax. Where was this when he dominated Marc Gasol in like game two? Or game three?
And three.
It's been five games now, and he's struggled in four of the games.
It is true, but
game two. Game two, he had like 13 points.
He's getting IVs literally before and after the game.
That's just excuse.
Like he's not sleeping.
Like he literally has the shits during games, Josh. Like come on.
Excuses. It's everything. It's something every series. I mean, last series it was the knee. This series it's the sickness. I think one point that you know TNT had a bang on last night, listening to Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal. They actually had a good point yesterday. And that your best player can't walk into the arena by himself with his head down, looking all depressed. And, you know, it goes back to that saying, like, you never let him see a sweat, right? I mean, he has to be the leader on this team. And despite the sickness, he still has to show up and provide energy and do the things that he normally does on the defensive end. And he was a ghost yesterday. He was just letting Gasol just fire away from three.
No. We agree with that part. Like, obviously, when he was on the court, like, he wasn't an effective player. But, like, the fact that, like the expectations for him to carry the load being sick, I think that's a little like unrealistic. And there is some floating theories and like people say like, oh, like what's really going on with him? Like, is it the knees? Are they trying to mask the knee problem with like a bunch of different like infectious stuff? But at the end of the day, like he didn't look like the player he was. And if he doesn't in game six, I don't think Philly has a chance. But if he can play at even 75% of his best performance this in the series, which was game three, I think they have a chance, and I think the series could end up going to seven games. Obviously, the Raptors can play well and shoot Philly out off the court, but like I think Embiid's health is probably the second biggest storyline. Obviously, you talked about Kawhi carrying the load, and like, playoff Kawhi is a real deal. And I think no Raptors fan, or no real Raptors fan, will be upset if at the end of this season, however it ends, he leaves, because he's given them the best playoff performance out of any Raptor ever. And it's not even close.
Wow. You're already going to the free agency, eh?
Well, no, I'm just saying that he's played so, he's been played so well that no matter how he leaves, I don't really think the Raptors fans can be mad at him, because he gave it his all when he was here. Like, there was doubts that if he was even going to play. Remember in the offseason, it was like, oh, how many games was he going to sit? Was he going to give maximum effort and all this? Like,
Chris Haynes brought up the fact that he's not even sure he's going to report to camp. Like, come on.
Yeah, of course. But, like, at the end of the day, we did worry a little about his health, like, obviously. And, like, how many games is it going to take? Because he's, what, played, like, 7 or 9 games last year. And how much is he going to sit? And how effective is he going to be playing, like, be able to adjust his minutes in the playoffs? And at the end of the day, like, he's exceeded all expectations. Like, in high school, this report card would be like 4++++.
Yeah, fine. I obviously agree, but yeah. Toronto fans will always come up with a reason to complain if he leaves. Let's be real.
Yeah, but they don't have a good reason.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll find something.
On July 1st, I'm like, man, Kawhi, that guy, he didn't even play in like half of the games. What a loser.
Yeah, those 20 games, we could have got the first seed, and then we would have had home court, and then we could have beat the Bucks.
Oh, shots.
Yeah, that's a little too much information.
Implicit shots ahead of time.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yo, do you think that Danny Green actually continues to shoot this well? He was
okay.
Relax.
Okay, first of all, he's been shooting like crap the entire playoffs. So this is a law of averages game. So I think next series, when you play the Bucks and they give up the most 3-point attempts out of anybody, that's going to be Danny Green's series.
Okay, well, let's first worry about the 76ers. I'll answer your question, Peter. I'll answer your question. You know what? The law of averages probably will come around, and he shot very well last game. He shot very poor for the first 3 or 4 games, so he's probably going to have an average shooting game next game.
He's getting wide open shots every game. Like, it's only a matter of time where the law of averages, you know, weighs out, and he's a 45% 3-point shooter in the regular season. It's going to come to fruition. It's going to happen.
He shot 68%, I think, yesterday, or even higher, like
71% yesterday.
Yeah, especially in the third quarter, like, him and Gasol were wide open. Like, they didn't even care at that point, so.
But the issue is that in blowout games like this, can you actually take it seriously? Like, I wouldn't even look at anything after halftime and consider it real ball or something to use for scouting purposes, because, like, Philadelphia wasn't really playing defense at that point. Toronto was getting anything they wanted. And then the fourth quarter was obviously just like bench players, so who cares about that? But that third quarter was kind of useless for any scouting purposes at this point.
Yeah, but the Raptors have been getting open looks. Like, I think that was a huge storyline going into this game five. Like, can they hit their shots? And yesterday they did, and when they did, and like, I think Philly just couldn't keep up. Obviously they had other issues like we talked about, but I think the Raptors have been consistently getting open looks. Like yesterday they just had like so many open looks. Like Philly at a point wasn't even playing any defense. But if the Raptors can get open looks, it changes like how you defend them. And like if you're gonna double Kawhi still, or if you're gonna try to let Kawhi like go try to beat you with 50 or 60 and limit the other guys, but the other guys have to hit their shots, and yesterday they did, so we'll see if they can carry that into game 7 or game 6.
So again, 2 points on this. First of all, going back to Embiid, I think your best player's energy on the court really dictates how you play as a team, especially in the playoffs. And again, with him not bringing any positive energy to the court and not really flying around on defense like he normally does, even though, again, he was sick, but he was sick last game too, and he played really well defensively. He just didn't bring it yesterday, and I think that brings the whole team down. And if they see that he's not really trying and moving around on defense and trying to get a hand up on Marcus Saul and Kawhi in the pick and rolls, and the other team just falls in line and goes with that line of defense. And the other thing is with the shooting, again, they were, I think, 10-plus percentage points lower in shooting open 3-point shots. throughout the course of the playoffs, or throughout the course of the series, sorry, than the first four games. So they're shooting like 32% versus like 43, 44% of wide open attempts. So again, it's regression of the mean. It's only a matter of time.
Joel Embiid also had 8 turnovers. Ben Simmons had 5. A major part of this was just transition points for Toronto too, right?
Yeah. It was like, if you looked at the box score, like the game wasn't a 36 point like win. Like it, like the numbers really didn't add up, but it just came down to Toronto getting more possessions. And like, I think one of the points we didn't talk about is Toronto's just been rebounding extremely well in their last two wins. They're not giving Philly extra chance points, and they're doing a good job of cleaning up the defensive boards. And obviously when you're making your shots, there's no boards for Philly to get. But at the end of the day, they just played better. Now, I think game six is a completely new game. A lot depends on Embiid's health. And I think the Raptors won't shoot as well as they did yesterday, but if they can shoot anywhere close, I think they're going to be in a good position. I said Raptors in seven before the series started, so I'm going to stick with that. I think Embiid has a game where he just has to show up, and they're going to be pumping him with different types of medications to get his knees under control and hopefully get that virus or like those 5 viruses out of him. But I think it'll be a close game. Hopefully. And I think Philly squeezes it out.
Josh, what do you think?
It's over.
So, yeah.
Raps in 6. And also on the rebounding note, I think the main reason why the rebounding so well the last couple of games is Kawhi. He's had a double-double in the first half in both the last two games. He's made it a point to really, you know, come in around the free throw line area and get those little tip-out rebounds that Philadelphia was getting in the first couple of games. So he's been really effective on the boards.
It's not just Kawhi, though. Last game, they played, like, a massive lineup, right?
With Ibaka.
Yeah, in game 4. They played Ibaka, Gasol, and Siakam all at the same time. And then Kawhi at the 2. Like, that's a huge lineup. Of course you're going to finally get boards.
Yeah, and you know what? That's actually a good defensive lineup as well. Like, all those players are, like, considered, like, elite defenders at one point in their career, obviously. Like, Ibaka and Gasol are a bit older, and they're still good defensively. Ibaka has some moments where he has like lapses, but that's a very good defensive lineup. Like if you go from like 2 to 5 right there, like those are players that have once at least been like defensive player of the year candidates.
But both those guys have struggled on the boards, you know, throughout the course of their career too. So, and they have big, you know, box out responsibilities. Like Gasol has to box out Embiid. And then Simmons has been, you know, terror on the boards in certain games, especially on the offensive rebounds. So we've gotten him under control as well. I think, you know, Kawhi coming in for those rebounds has been huge, getting like 13-plus rebounds in both games.
Mm-hmm. It's also surprising that Tobias Harris hasn't tried to take advantage of Serge Ibaka on the perimeter as much. Like, especially in game 4, like, when the Ibaka-Gasol lineup was in, Harris should have just taken him every time. He's so much faster. He's got a better handle. He can blow by him. Because Serge isn't that fast laterally anymore.
Yeah, but Tobias Harris has really been kind of like he's almost assumed the role. Yeah, he's assumed the role of a shooter.
Yeah,
like he's actually been like trying to like he understands how Philly plays, and I think he understands that he's probably going to be taking a lot of like 3-pointers. And it's almost like he's assumed the role of like of a Kyle Korver or. Like a player that plays mostly on the outside, like limited action towards the rim, because he knows it would get very congested if he has to get in there with Simmons and Embiid living there. So at the end of the day, like he has been quiet. He has to play better. The thing with Philly is like they do obviously rely on Embiid, but they have a bit more proven secondary scoring than the Raptors. And they don't rely on shooting as much. They rely on Embiid a lot, but I think at the end of the day, Philly's in a position where they just have to limit the open looks and hope Embiid's healthy.
Seem to control the ball. Also, can we just point out how sexy JJ Redick's shot looks whenever he's making them? I don't think I've seen him take a normal set shot in months. He's always swaying to the left or the right.
And, yeah, it seems
looks
like
incredible.
It looks cool.
It looks beautiful.
Like, it looks
I'm not saying it's effective right now, but it looks gorgeous.
Yeah, it does. It, like, you just wonder, like, sometimes, like, when is it the last time he actually, or, like, does he practice those, or is it, like, he's always just running?
Yeah, there's no doubt. He has
no, but,
to.
Like, does he, no, of course, but, like, how much of his time is he practicing, like jumpers where he's literally running across the court, like, in the, like, perpendicular direction of the rim?
The entire offseason.
Yeah. Because the offense is so reliant on dribble handoffs between him and Embiid, right? So if he's just swinging to the left or the right during the DHO, it's a lot easier to get his shot rather than having to set up every time.
Yeah, it gives the time for the defender to get a good contest. Yeah.
Also, quick trivia. Which of the Raptors had a negative plus minus yesterday?
Jeremy Lin.
One player. No, Jeremy Lin was plus three, had 1 3-pointer on one of two shooters.
I'm going to say Fred VanVleet.
No. VanVleet was like plus 11. He actually played valuable minutes. This guy is like way on the, like, deep on the bench.
Eric Moreland.
No, plus 3.
Oh, Malcolm Miller.
Yeah. 2 minutes, 0 for 1 from the field, minus 4.
It's funny because, like, Raptors fans were, going, Nick Nurse on playing him instead of Norman Powell or Fred VanVleet because he has size and he can shoot, but at the same time, he was a G-League player this season, so it's probably not best to put him in a playoff series. He's not ready for that.
Nah. I'd rather play Jody Meeks or Pat McCaw before Malcolm Miller. At least they've played in real games.
Yeah, and can we all just real quick, before we switch series, a shout out to Greg Monroe's three-point attempt and the subsequent yanking him from the game and not playing him another minute.
He almost broke the backboard.
He's got to do what he's got to do, you know? They're going to leave you open, you shoot.
Yeah, I think one thing on a serious note is Siakam was getting, they were giving him like the wing threes, like pretty much the whole game. And like he's more of a corner three spot-up shooter. But I think in the game, like they were playing off him quite a bit. Like they were trying to like test his calf, and they know that a lot of his game is about being aggressive and getting to the rim. But if he can expand his 3-point shooting to hit those kind of like those threes at the 45-degree angle, like he'd be a lethal player. Oh, if he already isn't,
he will this summer.
Yeah,
he will. All right, let's stay east, just so we can do this a little bit more efficiently. This should go up before the game tonight, so we're good to go. The Milwaukee Bucks have taken a 3-1 lead over the Boston Celtics. And Kyrie Irving keeps on saying, you know, who cares? Who cares if I shoot poorly? It's whatever. I should just shoot more next game. I'm going to shoot 30 shots instead of 22. This Boston team just looks like it's completely imploded. And Giannis is just dominating them from beginning to end.
You mean George Hill and Pat Connaughton have dominated them from beginning to end?
Yo, I love Pat Connaughton, man. That guy is
And
so
shout
fun.
Out to George Hill.
And George Hill, yeah.
Yeah, George Hill has saved Eric Bledsoe's ass this postseason.
He looks young again. He's going in for pull-ups. He's going in for, like, dunks down the middle of the lane.
If he wasn't playing this well, it would be 2-2 right now, and people would be killing Bledsoe for his performance.
But what about Chris Middleton, the actual second-best player on the team?
Yeah, he hasn't played well the last couple of games, but again, it hasn't mattered because those two guys have shown up on the bench, and Boston's bench hasn't stepped up at all. Gordon Hayward has been a complete ghost in the last couple of games, and their playoff performance sort of ebbs and flows with him. I think when he plays well, you know, obviously in game one he played really well, and he was more involved in the offense, and the last couple of games he's played spot-up shooter and guy who's only drove to kick the ball instead of be more aggressive. I think he's only had, like, maybe less than 10 points the last three games. And, Boston's just all out of sorts right now, and everyone was talking about the regular season Boston team and that they wouldn't just be able to turn on the playoffs, and now we're seeing that, unfortunately.
I'm not going to lie. I thought they had turned the corner on this, like, towards the end of the season. Like, the chemistry actually looked good. And then to just sweep Indiana, I was kind of confident. Obviously, I predicted they would win, and they're not going to at this rate. But they look so much better before. Like, I don't understand what it is about Milwaukee that's just stopping them. The length? Giannis finally just realizing that he can just body anyone that he wants? Bledsoe's
defense?
I
think it's the tempo. Like, I think Milwaukee pushes the ball, and I think that Boston has to really worry about that transition game. And there was, I think, like six or seven shots that Kyrie took. We didn't spend too much time talking to him, but I know that we're going to spend a good segment of this series talking about Kyrie as well. But I think like Milwaukee's that type of team that if they're playing good defense or if you do a bad shot, they're going to kill you in transition. And Milwaukee, after the first game, kind of really made that adjustment, and I think Giannis took it personally, just getting to the rim. Like, I think he's averaged like something like 16 or 17 free throws over the last three games. And at the end of the day, like, I think Boston is they have some internal turmoil. I think that's probably more of what's happening with Boston than what Milwaukee is doing. I think Milwaukee is just like a team that's has players that know their role. They have adapted to their role in the entire season. They know how to perform at a high level in their specific role. And they're a well-oiled machine. And Boston's like pretty much the complete opposite. Like a bunch of players who don't know their roles, don't want to like accept the roles they've been given. They haven't been playing in their roles for a while. And like, I think a lot of people just expected Boston to figure it out in the playoffs and like with adversity that they would forget their internal turmoil. And it's kind of been like the complete opposite. Like you could just tell that a lot of the players aren't really playing as a cohesive unit and they're not playing for each other. They're playing for themselves.
Ugh, that's so disappointing. Like, I don't even know what to say at this point. Can Al Horford actually do anything against Giannis? Because after game one, Giannis just realized that, you know, this is Al Horford. I'm just going to go around him. Or I'm just going to literally go over the guy. And Horford just looked like a step or two slow compared to Giannis. Obviously, they're completely different animals physically. But still, Horford throughout the whole year was, you know, one of those guys that knew how to play defense on Giannis. He would always just slow him down in the paint. But now he's not really doing anything defensively. He's sort of just standing there. And hoping it's hard. He's a body.
Yeah, well, it's hard. Like, especially when Giannis is, what, shooting 45% from three? Like, that's a huge stat right there that I think it makes it very tough to defend Giannis now. Like, if you were relying on him shooting, like, 20, 25% from three that maybe was earlier in the season he was shooting that rate, like, it would be a little easier. You would give him the shot. You would give him a bit of space and force him to shoot or let him reset the offense and like that would take time off the clock. Now he's hitting his threes and like how do you defend that? Like, do you let him just go in for the two? Or he's shooting like an incredible rate, he's shooting better than Kyrie from three.
Yeah, but Boston will give that up though. Like, most of the shots he's taken are, you know, uncontested. Yeah. Looks, and he's not a good spot up shooter. Like, he's, you know, taking a couple of dribbles and going into a 3-point shot, and he has hit them to his credit, obviously. But I think the biggest adjustment the Bucks have made is getting him more screen and roll action, whether that's with him and Brook Lopez as him as a ball handler, or as the roll man with Chris Middleton. That's been the most unstoppable play for the Bucks. So I think they're going less ISO with Giannis up top because it's a lot easier to, you know, sink in on if you're a, you know, perimeter player, which is what they were doing in the first game and the second game, really. But the last couple games, they've given him a head start in pick and roll action. And he's getting the ball at 18 feet on the run instead of having to, like, take the ball from the three-point line and go against five guys. Even if he gets past Horford, yeah, he has, you know, a few guys waiting for him. So that was a big adjustment, and Boston really hasn't been able to defend that at all. And I think the other reason why they haven't been able to defend that is, like, there was a couple clips going around Twitter, especially in the fourth quarter, where Kyrie was pointing at guys on the court like Morris and Horford to switch off the different guys in order for him to guard Giannis or Middleton. There's about four or five different clips throughout the course, yeah, of like the late third and early fourth where he was like, I'm taking these guys. I don't trust you guys anymore. And Giannis like scored every single time he got switched onto him.
I don't think it was that he wanted to switch. I think he was just too lazy to stay with his man.
No, I think he wanted to switch. I think he got to his head.
No,
it was
way.
Like one of those street things, you know? You're playing street ball. And one guy's scoring on one of your teammates. You're like, you sure you want to guard him? I'll take him this time. And then Giannis just went through.
Yeah,
like, what are you
there's
thinking?
No way Kyrie, there's like a foot difference of height between the two of them.
There is.
Let alone like
there's literally
100 pounds of weight.
It's machismo,
like, no
man. It's machismo.
Oh my god. I thought it was the exact opposite. I thought he was just being lazy on defense.
It didn't look that way. The way the plays, like, you know, came to fruition, like, it seemed like he just wanted to guard the best players that were on the play.
Also, Kyrie has a like in his head, I think he has a little like big man syndrome. Like he wants to be the top dog.
Oh, no doubt.
And like he wants that responsibility and he wants the storybook ending and the storybook written about him. And he's obviously a very clutch player. Like we all remember his 2016 finals performance. But I think one big thing with him is he's really not done a good job of helping his team get good looks. Like we talked a lot about Kyrie and obviously Giannis, but like there's some players last year that were, I think, severely overperforming. And where are they now? Like Jason Tatum. these players have to show up. Like at the end of the day, the Bucks score a lot. They score like what, 110, 120 a game. Boston's not really going to be winning many games if they're barely hitting 100. And you need like Tatum to go for 20. You need Jaylen Brown to go for like 15. And obviously you need big games from Kyrie as well. But like no one on Boston's been playing well the last three games. And at the end, also at like another point too, just like I really don't know where most of the blame goes. Like, do you blame the players? Do you blame Kyrie? Do you blame Gordon Hayward, Brad Stevens?
Yeah, how about blaming coach once in a while? Yeah, he's been like coach this whole series.
Yeah, there's been enough blame to go around, but like who really deserves it the most? It probably is Kyrie, best player. But a lot of people have been underperforming.
Yeah, I think the biggest way that you know that there's a big chemistry problem is in the third quarter of last game, both Giannis and Middleton had four fouls by like the 7 minute mark. And then they brought in their bench with Connaughton and George Hill, and they went on a massive run to open up the game. I think it was like a tie game at that point when both guys had four fouls. You'd think of what the two best players going out, yeah, be able to extend the lead being at your home court, and Connaughton and George Hill were dominating. It didn't make any sense. But that's Boston for you this season.
Yo, Pat Connaughton's a Boston boy, man. He's living for those TD Bank Arena games. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, TD Garden.
TD Garden, my bad.
He is a multi-sport phenomenon, too. He was drafted in the MLB, threw a 90 mile-per-hour fastball. He's got a 43-inch vertical.
Yo, do you know athlete. What? Do you know what level he played at in baseball? Single A ball. Let's relax.
Hey, he got drafted at least.
Blocked shot by Connaughton, and he is ahead of the field. Watch it down.
He can get up, Mark. Do not sleep on this man just because he has a nice fastball and a curveball. He's a hooper at heart. That's why he chose the league. He wanted to be with the best athletes going to work.
Yeah, the single A ball. Yo, the MLB is sort of like the NFL, man. They have like 40 rounds of drafts, okay? Just because you can hold someone's rights doesn't mean they're actually good, like solid at the sport.
So you're saying that I could get drafted then this season?
Theoretically, yeah. Sure. You just won't make any money in single A ball.
So you're saying there's a chance?
Yeah. Yeah. Hoop dreams are still alive, man. Or mound dreams?
Mound dreams.
I bet you dreams? Pat Connaughton was a better baseball player than Michael Jordan, though.
Yeah, probably. I don't know, man.
MJ's Michael wasn't very good.
MJ played double A ball, though, at least.
Well, he only played double A ball because they wanted to get the fans out. Because
he's Michael Jordan?
Yeah, pretty much. They filled up the arenas when he was coming to town.
True. All right, is there any chance that Boston comes back?
I'm just interested to see how many points they give up tonight, because I think they're going to lose by a lot, and you're going to see that...
120.
What's that?
120.
Maybe more.
120 to 98.
They might give up 140 tonight.
Jesus Christ.
Let's see how much they quit, especially in the first and second quarters.
Can we talk about Brad Stevens not showing up either? He's made like zero adjustments in the series. It's not just his players, right?
Yeah, but I think if his players played slightly better, the games wouldn't have been as lopsided as they were. At a certain point, like, you can make as many adjustments as you want, but when Gordon Hayward plays 30 minutes and gets you 2 points, like, I don't know how you adjust for that. Like, obviously you just don't play him, but then you're going to have Kyrie shooting the ball 30 times, 32 times at like what, a clip of 27%.
You know what I think is going to happen tonight? I think Kyrie's going to pull a Kobe and just not shoot in the first half. And then he's going to show people like, oh yeah, this is what you wanted. Same thing as what Kobe did in the finals against Detroit.
Yo, that'd be sick.
I think that's going to happen tonight. I'm predicting that right now.
That would be so awesome. Be very cool. Yeah. At least it'd be entertaining.
And then... Stupid dog.
Kobe heard his name.
For real.
I think in this game, I think it will be... actually, not a close game, but I think it will be relatively close. I think the Bucks still win. I think Boston will show a bit more heart than we're giving them credit. Like, they have imploded, but it's an elimination game, and Boston's still, like, a pretty experienced team having gone to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. But I can see this being, like, a 114-100 kind of game, and it being close until the fourth.
Yeah, I think Danny Ainge has already bought a plane ticket for Kyrie, and then Terry Rozier is going to drive him to the airport after the game. He's not coming back to Boston.
Oh no,
they're all gone.
That's settled.
In general, like, even if he has a house there, he's not coming back there to get his stuff. He's just gonna, like, hire a moving company and have him pick it up.
Yeah, it's too cold for him anyways.
It's too cold for all of us. All right, let's move on. Do you guys want to go to Golden State or to Denver? I'll let you guys choose.
Let's go Denver.
Denver. My team. Yeah,
nice and quick. Nice and quick.
There's I know you wanted to get there. This is going to be nice and quick, man. They're finally up 3-2. They blew out the Blazers by 26 yesterday. They survived a 4-overtime game, even though they lost it. Nikola Jokic played 65 minutes somehow. They came back in game 4. They had full control. I'm not going to say they dominated, but they had full control throughout the game. And now they're in the driver's seat. Took back home court advantage, going back to Portland tomorrow. And, man, they've done a really good job on Damian Lillard. Between playing Torrey Craig and then Will Barton on him at all times, Malik Beasley's contributed on defense. Like, they are just smothering that guy.
Yeah, I think actually, funny enough, I think the series really changed in that 4-overtime game for Denver. Even though they lost that game, I think they discovered that they had Paul Millsap on the court at that point in the game, and they're like, you know what, this guy is pretty much unguardable for Portland because they have no player that's his size, his physicality, his strength on their roster. And even though they lost that game, they were giving Millsap a lot of looks late in the game with Jokic being pretty much like dead tired, and he was scoring at will. And I think they took that kind of little like 10 minutes of him playing exceptionally well, and they're like, you know what, why don't we just use him in game 5, 4 and 5? And Portland's had no answers. I don't see them having an answer, just because you can't really add anyone to your roster that can guard him, and it's really been smooth sailing from that point on. I think Millsap's really been the X factor this season, this series. Obviously, Jokic and Jamal Murray have been balling out and playing exceptionally well. You expect them to play really well, but you needed someone else to really be that third option. And Paul Millsap's giving you that production, and feel a little bad for Portland. They had such a great series against OKC. I think Dame's actually been trying a little too hard, but it's very tough when you have players like Aminu and Harkless who are very inconsistent supporting you. So I think this series has been entertaining, especially in the 4-overtime game, but I think Denver's figured it out.
Yeah, Kitchener legend Jamal Murray has been unbelievable this series. And as I've said before, he's going to lead Canada to the gold medal in the 2024 games. I'm very much looking forward to that in 5 years. And
can we stay with this decade?
I mean, maybe next year. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, the Nuggets roll with how Jamal Murray plays, and he's been amazing on the pick and rolls. Him and, you know, Jokic have been unstoppable as a duo. And, you know, as you said, Millsap, for some reason, against Portland, like, he always goes off against him. It's like he sees Aminu, and it's just meow, meow, you know? It's just he's just eating up. He's just eating up Aminu. It's meow mix for him, you know.
What was that? What does he do?
Can you? I didn't hear it. Can you say that again?
I don't know what I was trying to say there, to be honest. But
what the hell was that?
I don't know.
That was so bizarre.
But yeah, I mean, Denver, I think they have figured out some things, and I think that Portland, they're gonna have to play Zach Collins more because he's the only guy that's had any success against Millsap and Jokic so far. And you know, Aminu hasn't really provided anything on either side of the ball. They thought that putting him on Jokic would be able to slow down the pick and roll with him and Murray. But even Murray last game just went off against Aminu on the pick and roll. He had a couple up and under plays where he got to the basket against him. And he's just been a huge negative for them. But when Zach Collins has come in, he's provided a boost. And he's really tough on defense as well, even though he has a massive weight disadvantage against Jokic, obviously. But he's done a pretty good job against Millsap. And he does try hard against Jokic. He's probably done the best job about anybody. And, you know, they figured out Enes Kanter, which I think is the biggest adjustment that Denver's made so far in this series, is that Kanter has been a big negative the last two games especially.
So what are you proposing here? That they run Kanter and Zach Collins at the same time?
It seems like it. I think that's the only solution, where Kanter has to be like a big offensive force again, scoring 20 plus points like he did in the first couple games. And then Zach Collins has to be the guy to, I think, defend the pick and roll against Jokic and Murray.
That's going to be like near impossible though, man.
You got to try something though. You got to try something different, because whatever they're doing right now is not working.
Yeah, also, like, especially with, if you're playing Zach Collins and Enes Kanter, like, you're really limiting Dame's and McCollum's ability to attack the rim with those two big bodies inside, and it just makes them easier to defend. Like, who's going to give you that outside shooting? Is it going to be Harkless?
Yeah, about that.
I mean, the other way they could go is just go all scoring and just have Curry start, and then you start all three guards together, and you just try to outscore Denver.
What, they would get bodied so hard, though.
I mean, they're already giving up so many offensive rebounds. You might as well just go all the way with it, right?
Yeah, they're just in a tough position, especially with the Nurkic injury. Like, I think the series would be a lot more entertaining if Nurkic was healthy. And again, I think Denver's figured it out. Like, they've also had just good scoring. Like, I think Gary Harris has had really two good games, solid defensively and offensively, and I think they're rolling. I think Dame is going to have an exceptional like 30 to 35 plus game if they even have a chance on Thursday in game six. And even then, I don't think that might not be enough. And I think Denver's pretty much sealed the deal just by the way they've played. And I think Portland's kind of a little hopeless now.
Damn.
I still sort of think that Portland's going to win the next game, though.
Yeah, it's something about playing at home, right? Like, a lot of your role players will step up at this point. The assumption is
you
that...
You hope.
No, well, like, even when they're pressing Dame at half court, you still have guys like Aminu who aren't just standing in the corner anymore like they used to. He actually moves up and gets the ball, so he kind of helps Dame in that sense. Right? So you're not just having Lillard just try to split a double team and then go up for the three alone now. He's actually trying to get his guys involved.
He is trying, but I think the inconsistency and also, like, it's offensively, yeah, they have their own struggles, but, like, I really wonder, like, as Josh mentioned, like, how are you going to stop that Millsap, Jokic, and Jamal Murray combination? Like, especially with Millsap, he's just a mismatch.
Oh, totally. You just hope that Millsap has one of those games where he doesn't show up. Or Murray has one of those games where he just, like, where he's ice cold. That's the only chance for Portland.
Yeah, I think Murray's the key. They just have to slow him down somehow and then just force Jokic to score a bunch of points like San Antonio did.
Yeah. Also, can we talk about how bad Gary Harris has been from the perimeter? I don't think he's hit a single three this whole series.
That's all right, though, because he's defending Dame really well. So, I mean, you lose your legs doing that.
No, he's taking McCollum most of the time, though.
No, the last couple of games, they're not Dame a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess when Craig is out, right?
Yeah, he's played Barton him a lot. Craig hasn't played that much the last couple of games either, because Barton's played pretty well. He's hit those big shots in the fourth quarter of the last game.
Yeah.
Not yesterday, but the game before.
It was that four overtime game that got Barton going. And then after that, he's just been on fire.
He was pretty garbage the rest of the playoffs, but you need a guy like that off the bench that'll just keep gunning, because he can change an entire series with his shooting.
Irrational confidence, man.
Yep. Each team needs one guy like that.
Who does Portland have like that, though?
I mean, so far it's been Rodney Hood, surprisingly. He's actually played really well this series. And, you know, Portland, the one advantage they have had is off the bench, surprisingly, because Denver's, you know, bench has been really good the entire year, but this series they haven't really shown up. Beasley's been a ghost. You know, Monte Morris hasn't played well at all. I think he's just shooting like 10% from the field.
Yeah, he's been awful. Plumlee's been bad. Beasley's been all right. Like, he's still getting his shots, and he's playing really good defense. That's all you really need him for.
Yeah, but he was really good in the first series against San Antonio, and then the series he hasn't really... I guess he hasn't played as much either, which affects your production as well, but...
This is true. Who are the two Denver Nuggets who had negative plus minuses yesterday? Who actually played? two of the guys did not play.
Two scrubs?
Two guys that you just mentioned, Josh.
No, the Plum.
Isaiah Thomas?
Thomas didn't touch the floor yesterday. That's how bad it was in a 26-game or a 26-point victory.
The Plum and Monte.
Monte, yes. The Plum was plus two, so he narrowly survives.
Mm. Interesting.
Did Hernando Gomez play?
He did. He hit 1-3 and then did a shimmy to the bench.
Yeah, that was great.
But he was plus three. Yeah. Oh, he was good. Malik Beasley, Josh.
Oh, wow.
Minus five.
Oh, there you go.
Two guys who actually play like valuable bench minutes. Valuable-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's it for this series. We've gone through it pretty good. I think Denver pulls it out.
I think we all agree that Denver pulls it out in the next
game. Denver in seven.
Yeah, okay. I like seven too. I think they close it out in altitude.
Yeah, like I think they're unstoppable at home. Like I think Portland has a chance, but I think Denver's gonna win in six, especially the way they've been playing. Just a question for you: how come Portland doesn't really make Jamal Murray play much on defense? Like, it seems like he has an easy assignment on defense.
Oh, he has Mo Harkless.
Yeah, I mean, unless they go pick and roll with Harkless and get him onto Lillard and just go ISO, which is going to tire Lillard out. I mean, it's hard to go isolation the entire game against one guy, right?
Yeah.
I think you just want them to pound Harkless inside, right? Is that what you're leaning towards?
I'm just saying that whenever they do the pick and roll with Jokic, it seems now that they're doubling Dame and they're forcing him to get rid of the ball. Like there was around three possessions straight where they just like kind of trapped Lillard and forced them to cut it to Aminu. And Aminu really wasn't that effective, like catching the ball and making a decision. I think he had one turnover and then one time Millsap stripped him.
Yeah.
I feel like if you make Jamal Murray play on the defensive end, you're going to tire him out a little. And he's not a terrible defender, but he's not very good.
the issue is that because they have Harkless covering him, like Mo Harkless isn't a valuable contributor on offense, right?
It makes it easy on him.
Yeah, but that's what I mean, though. He's being hidden on defense very well.
Yeah,
you can't just pound the ball. You can't just run pick and roll every time and just assume that Harkless is going to do something with it, because most of the time he doesn't. He's either going to fumble the ball or he'll just miss a layup, because he does that a lot. Right? Like, he's not the best finisher.
Yeah, and if Denver actually wins this series, like Jamal Murray is going to be in for a rude awakening no matter who they play.
Yeah, it's going to be rough next series.
Yeah, I do think that they have to find a way to get him playing more defense. For him, A, to limit his offensive production. B, you're attacking probably their biggest weakness on defense. There is a chance that especially Murray's had kind of a history of like nagging injuries. Like you're just making him work. Like I feel when I watch Portland play offense, it's like when Portland play offense and Denver play defense, I just see like Jamal Murray just like kind of chilling, resting, getting his energy back.
It's also the system that they're running, right? Like throughout the whole year, you've been running your offense through Dame and CJ and Nurkic whenever he was on. So it's kind of hard to just change your whole game plan and just be like, okay, we need to focus in on this one guy. That's why Toronto didn't really target JJ Redick much either. You're not gonna have Danny Green just targeting JJ Redick, right?
Yeah, but I think you can make them work still, and I think that's one way that they can stop Jamal Murray, because like remember we said that the like Josh had mentioned it, the key is to really limit Jamal Murray. Like one way to limit them is make him work twice as hard on defense than he currently is.
That's true.
And I think the only way you do that is if you start Steph Curry. I think that's the only way that you're going to get him on defense is you have him
start Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Or Rodney Hood.
Yeah, I mean, Rodney Hood, he's been good in his role as a spot-up guy and a guy that's like taking a ball at the dribble a little bit, but you know, he's not really a guy that has to be really guarded, you know?
I like Hood off the bench for this team, too. Like, he adds an extra, like a threat off the bench that they don't really have otherwise.
Contract year Rodney Hood.
Former finals player Rodney Hood, thank you very much. Finals contributor.
contributor.
Also, I have a programming note on a different series that we've already gone over. Okay. So we have an annual playoff tradition of one of the Morris brothers saying, "I still think we're the better team after losing the series." So we have that today now with Marcus Morris and them eventually losing the series tonight.
Marcus Morris Sr. Yes.
Yo, Marcus Morris Sr. has actually played pretty well. Because he's getting minutes, I'm just saying.
He has, but it's still pretty Kyrie funny that like Markieff the last couple of years has said that after losing, you know, series 4-1 or 4-2 against better teams, and now this is happening.
Markieff out of his damn mind. But good point. Let's move on. Golden State Houston. Houston has miraculously tied it up. In my mind, it's miraculous. I'm going to say not mostly because, well, obviously because of James Harden, but also PJ Tucker. Just being an absolute monster out there. Last game, he had 5 offensive boards and 17 points, which is just incredible for PJ Tucker. What the hell is going on with Golden State? What the hell is going on with Klay Thompson? This guy literally just can't shoot right now. He's been awful. And as a result, on offense, he's an idiot. He's turning the ball over. His defense, he fouled James Harden twice on threes last game. What is going on with this guy?
I don't think it's just Klay Thompson. I think it's a matter of the depth. I think this is a series where they actually missed on Marcus Cousins and having one more guy that can produce on both sides of the ball. Because you see off the bench, I think they had Kevon Looney play at like 20 minutes. They had McKinney play 12. Livingston played like 14 or so. And those guys aren't really giving you anything. Like Kevon Looney is a good perimeter defender when he's switched onto the ball. Or he has been in the past against Houston. Last game he wasn't that great, obviously. But I think the effects of not having Boogie Cousins and having another guy you can rely on offense, especially, or a guy that can really beast in the paint, allows Houston to play Tucker at center a lot more often. And they've been like a plus 22, I think, so far in the series with Tucker playing center. So that's been a big thing. And I think they're overloading now to like guard James Harden and Chris Paul and even Eric Gordon when Steph Curry's on the floor. And trying to guard Gordon, who's been amazing in the series, where they have Draymond sort of shade over to their side, and then Tucker's getting in the cracks and getting those offensive rebounds when it matters. So that's been a big thing. And I also think the death lineup is being overplayed just because of the lack of depth. Like, that lineup was really supposed to be used in a situation where they're trying to extend the lead or really just pound on a team when they're down, and now having to play them like 20-plus minutes a game, which is something they haven't really done over time. I think they've only done it like 2 other times before the series started where they played that lineup 20-plus minutes in the game. And I think in this series, they played that lineup 20-plus minutes in the game 4 times. So, or all 4 times, actually. So, they have to find a way to get some guys off the bench to produce, whether that's like playing Jonas Derebko or maybe Quinn Cook and trying to get some shooting on the floor to, you know, just try to get somebody else going.
Yeah.
Because what they're doing right now is not working.
Jericho didn't play last game. Jericho didn't play a minute last game. So strange.
Yeah, I think the depth is a key issue. I think what we talked about in the Portland-Denver series is I felt Houston is kind of a team that's built to pick on the weakest defender. And they're doing a great job of getting Steph Curry and forcing him to play defense, maybe getting him in foul trouble in some of the earlier games in the
series.
He's
been in foul trouble every game so far.
Yeah, and the reason they do that is they just pick on him, and then the fact that he has to play defense so hard makes him a less efficient player offensively, because at the end of the day, like, your energy is going to be drained. They're doing a great job of just picking on him, and they're also, again, I don't want to get into this, but I just fucking hate the push-offs. Like, it's hard to play defense when two of their top scorers are constantly fouling the defense and they're not getting called because no one wants to see that being called and the series being really a blowout. But yeah, good on Houston for getting back in the series. They've been actually very good at playing Golden State away. This is actually a series that could go either way. The Warriors haven't been playing their best. I think we've all seen them play much better. I think with Klay, though, I think he's kind of getting, like, he's letting the mind games get the best of him. Like, he's worrying more about Harden's foul calls and the flopping of Chris Paul and all of this and that, and not worrying about putting the ball in the bucket. Like, it's kind of like they're just, like, he seems to be a player that's really more focused on that than his own performance. And if he plays like he does on an average level, I think Golden State's going to win the series. It's just he's really been underperforming. And I think shout out to PJ Tucker. Like, he's really been, I think, the X factor in this series. Like, he's giving them a huge boost on both sides of the floor, giving them versatility. And a lot of the times, if they're not attacking Curry on a pick and roll, they have Curry and Tucker matched up underneath the rim. So if they do shoot a three, Tucker's going to get that rebound. And it happened a lot, I think, at the end of the fourth quarter of the third game, where they were just completely dominating the glass. And I don't know. I really want to say Golden State wins this series. I know a lot of people want them to lose, but I can't stand watching Houston play. And I don't know how the series is going to go. I think this one is like a coin flip on who's going to win. I think all the next three games will be close, but I really don't know who's going to win.
How do we feel about Steph Curry having a tweaked ankle, Kevin Durant having like, what's his injury? Like an elbow injury on his shooting hand?
Yeah, he was wearing that sleeve last game.
Yeah, and then he took it off, right? Like, right after he like hurt, he fell on it, I think he took it off. Anyways, my whole point is that Golden State is partially hiding behind a lot of injuries on their star players too, right? So it's not just that they're just being outperformed. It's, you know, our guys are hurt. That's why the shots aren't dropping. That's why Steph is shooting 4 of 14 from 3. Really, the only like consistent player on Golden State, other than KD, has been Draymond.
Yeah, Draymond's been really good throughout the series, obviously. Yeah. But as we said before with Embiid, if you're playing in the game, you got to show up. It doesn't matter what kind of injury you have or if you're sick, you still have to produce.
Yeah, and it really does seem like Golden State's worrying a little more about the officiating and the flopping and Houston just being like a huge little like thorn in the side of like Golden State, and they're worried more about that than playing the game. Like, I feel like half the time they're like complaining to the refs, the other half they're like, man, this guy's flopping, like this guy's just annoying, PJ Tucker's going over the back, and like just play the game.
Complaining about over the back is so funny to me. What a ridiculous foul call that is. I can't, oh my god, he out hustled me. How can you let him out hustle? Come on.
Yeah, and at, like this is obviously a series where you know that Houston wants to get revenge, especially how they felt, and like it, like them complaining to the league about the refs and all that. It just seems like Golden State's worried about all the extracurriculars instead of like what's happening on the basketball court. And like obviously the whole KD, is he going to leave saga, like that's looming, Clay in free agency, like just play the game, win a championship, and then worry about all that stuff after.
Yep. I could not agree more.
There's a report now out of Warriors camp that Klay Thompson is reportedly unhappy as he's tired of sitting around and getting the crumbs left behind.
Yeah, that was a
who
report.
Reported that?
It is Warriors on NBCS.
Oh, NBC? Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, like obviously the team dynamic has changed a lot since KD's arrived, and like it's even shifting more and more. Like I think this playoffs has kind of almost been like it's been asserted that this is KD is going to get the last shot, or he's going to be the player they play through in the last 5 minutes of the game.
It's got to be hard for Steph now too, right?
Yeah, like he's definitely taking a back role, and at the same time Steph's getting picked on defensively, and like, obviously he's not going to become an exceptional defensive player, but he's putting himself in bad situations where he's playing with like four fouls and you can't play aggressive. And he's also just being crowded out of his airspace. And shout outs to Houston. They're playing well. Don't like their style, but they're playing well. And
they're executing.
Yeah. Like they're hitting their shots. They're playing hard. I really don't know how this series is going to go. I'm going to pray and hope that Golden State wins this. And just because I love basketball, let's go to a game seven. But I could see the series going completely the opposite way and Houston winning in six or seven.
Yeah, the series needs to go seven games no matter what, just so we can destroy whoever loses and call them playoff chokers, because you know that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I would love that.
Two-time finals MVP, Kevin Durant, playoff choker.
He didn't show up in game 7 when it mattered.
I can't wait for that take of the second round. I cannot wait.
And you're going to hear the reports that KD had a one-way ticket booked to New York before the game. That's why he didn't play.
Also July not going 1st. Back to Golden State. Also just getting movers.
Yep. He's using the exact same movers as Kyrie. Their stuff is going together.
Yeah, they're sharing. And they're going to the same destination.
They're sharing an apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rent is high in New York,
oh,
right?
It's crazy.
Yeah. I think one other interesting point, too, is if Houston does manage to win this series, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, or I'm getting ahead of myself. If Houston wins this series, I think they are the team to beat in the rest of the finals. And I think they're probably going to win the championship. Like, this is their mountain to climb. Nah, this is their Mount Everest.
If Houston wins this, then the championship is going to the East.
No, I think it might Milwaukee be anyway. I think whoever comes out of the series is going to be, you know, battered and bruised up.
They'll be dead. Yeah.
Nah.
Like, nah. Denver, if Denver secures a Game 6 victory, they might actually have a chance against whoever wins the series.
Nah, hot take. I think Houston, if they win this series, this is their Mount Everest. There's no bigger mountain to climb. This is, they're going to play, the way they play and just the way they're built, like, they're pretty much like Milwaukee in the sense that they play. Obviously, Milwaukee's had a better regular season, but I think Houston's been doing it longer, and they have a bit more experience on that end in like the pressure situation. So I think Houston's going to take it no matter what. Like, this is their finals, or this is the most competition they're going to face during these playoffs. And if they can win, they're going to win the finals. I'll definitely put money on that.
Let's do side bets instead of taking money from somebody else. I want to take your money instead. I will gladly take any East team against Houston.
I owe you guys $10 each. Let's just not talk about that, though.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah. Josh, I owe you. No interest. I thought
it was 20.
No, it was 10 each.
Josh. Could have used an extra $10, right?
Absolutely.
This guy. All right, I think let's wrap it up there. I want to thank everyone for listening.
Wait, hold on a second. Hold on a second. We got to predict who wins tonight.
You're killing me. What?
We got to predict who's going to win tonight.
Golden State.
You both got Golden State?
Golden State and Milwaukee State. Tonight.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, I guess.
And then okay. And I'll take Philly in game 6, and I'll take Denver in game 6.
Sure. I'm going to go Toronto game 6 and then Portland game 6.
Yeah, I got the same as Peter. Finals. And I think Golden State probably wins tonight, though. I would love to see the chaos of Houston winning.
It's hard, man. Winning in Golden State is very difficult.
Yeah, every game has been close so far, so maybe they get a couple bounces this game.
That's true. This is true. All right, now can I wrap it up, Josh?
Now you may.
Thank you very much.
Just want to get you on the record, you know?
Oh, it's done. It's done. All right, once again, I want to thank everyone for listening to that last 2 minutes of discussion. Please remember to rate and subscribe. Find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Anchor, all the major podcast platforms. Hit us up on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace.